In half an hour, we set out to find the world's last birds in active service, the messenger pigeons. But now, the new X-Files. Jerry Northam uncovers more from Britain's UFO archives.
We seem to get a lot of interesting sort of things come through again. Like, we had this noise come through last night.
We had exactly the same thing. There was this low kind of growling purr. Yeah. That's the only way you could describe it. Yeah. And whatever it was getting closer. Mm. And it made us feel sufficiently uncomfortable that perhaps it's time to be somewhere else.
It's just after Saturday midnight in the dense, pitch-darkness Hilsham Forest in Suffolk. And this is the perimeter fence of the old US air base. A line of cars is parked with Primus stoves cooking up cups of hot soup as a dozen or so sky watchers are out looking for UFOs and alien visitors. They do this three or four times a week. To believers, this place is the equivalent of Canterbury Cathedral or Stonehenge. During the Cold War, 3,500 Americans were stationed at Bentwaters Woodbridge as an airborne strike force facing east. On Boxing Day 1980, bright lights appeared in the forest just outside the east gate. Security guards went to investigate and reported strange screaming noises as the unexplained lights moved off into an open field. One said he saw a metallic object hovering or on legs. It disappeared as the patrol approached. Two nights later, the lights were back. The deputy base commander, Colonel Charles Holt, led a small search party into the woods, armed with a Geiger counter, a night image intensifier, and a dictaphone.
Looking directly overhead, one can see an opening in the trees, plus some freshly broken pine branches on the ground underneath. Looks like someone came off about 15 to 20 feet up, some small branches about in diameter.
Step and Holt recorded the progress across foreign farmland.
Sounds out of the farmers burning our animals. It's very, very active, making an awful lot of noise. There it is again. Watch. Straight ahead off my flash right there. There it is. Hey, I see it too. What is it?
We don't know, sir.
The search party moved on, chasing the distant light, and eventually reached a clear vantage point.
3:15, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south. 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in north are moving. One's moving away from us.
Moving out fast.
This one on the right head away too. Now we're both heading north. Okay, here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now. Now we're observing what appears to be a beam coming down to the ground. This is unreal.
News of the incident began to leak out almost immediately. The local UFO enthusiast, Brenda Butler, heard about it from an airman at the base.
He said there was an incident. And I said, well, what sort of incident? And he said, well, a craft came down. He said it crashed down in the forest. And I thought he was joking. I didn't take a lot of notice of him at the time, and he insisted that he was telling the truth. And eventually, I did believe him because he was really serious. And not long after that, another security guard, he came and told me there was an incident down here and a craft had landed. And after that, we began interviewing people all around the villages and that.
Brenda Butler and another UFO investigator tried to find out more. They went to see the British liaison officer at the base, who wouldn't confirm or deny that something had happened. When Brenda Butler later spoke to the American Colonel Holt, she became convinced that his searchers had a genuine UFO sighting.
I definitely do think that there was something happened here. Whether they saw extraterrestrials, I don't know, but Colonel Holt says that they saw something that is too horrendous to describe.
Did he give you any idea of what it was?
No, he didn't, because he said to make it public would scare people.
It's clear that on the night, the Americans took the sighting seriously. They contacted the radar and air traffic control centre to check for contacts on their screens. Squadron leader Derek Coombe was the senior officer on duty.
I remember phone calls coming through from the Bentwaters radar facility. There was an unexplained object they believed had landed in Rendlesham Forest, which they were investigating, and they thought that this might have come from space, and they therefore wished to verify whether there were any radar returns in the area.
And were there?
Nothing. They were very jumpy and quite panicky, as if to imply that there should be something, we should be seeing something.
Soon after the incident, Squadron Leader Donald Morland, the British liaison officer, heard at first hand what the American airman had seen.
Lieutenant Colonel Holt came over to my office and sat down and said, "Don, you're not going to believe this." And he told me all about these happenings and wanted to know what to do. Bearing in mind that I was fairly new on the base and didn't know whether they were pulling my leg or not, so I just asked him to put it all on paper and let me have it officially.
Half suspecting this was a Christmas party prank, Squadron Leader Morland was somewhat taken aback to get Colonel Holt's report, which he passed to the Ministry of Defence, where it was kept secret. Rumours began to fly about it, and a couple of years later, it was released in the US under the Freedom of Information Act. It's heady reading. Colonel Holt says that a sun-like light was seen through the trees, it moved about and pulsed. At one point, it appeared to throw off glowing particles. Later, he says, three star-like objects were noticed in the sky. They moved rapidly in sharp angular movements and displayed red, green and blue lights. When this report was picked up by the News of the World in October 1983, it became a sensation.
UFO lands in Suffolk and it's official. About 200 military and civilian personnel witnessed the astonishing event.
Not quite 200, in fact, it was fewer than 20. Attempts to prise information out of Whitehall proved more difficult, fuelling suspicion of an official cover-up. It was only 2 years ago, after repeated requests from, among others, the social historian Dr. David Clark of Sheffield University, that the MOD finally relented. Its file shows that checks were made of radar records and Geiger counter readings from the time of the incident. But nothing indicates to Dr. Clark that the MOD discovered anything to make the incident itself significant. Their main fear was public reaction.
What really concerned the Ministry of Defence were people snooping around on the base, asking questions about UFOs. It seems as if there was nuclear weapons of some kind stored at RAF Woodbridge. This wasn't public knowledge at the time. And at this time, we got the concern about American nuclear weapons being based in Britain. And I think if the left had picked up upon this story about the Americans who were guarding nuclear weapons crashing around in a forest in the middle of the night chasing flying saucers, this could have turned into a huge scandal at the time.
Which leaves the question of what really happened in Rendlesham Forest at Christmas 1980. Officers from Suffolk Police who visited the area reported that the only light they could see was from the nearby Orford Lighthouse. After the News of the World splash, other papers plotted the route taken by Colonel Holt's search party from the supposed landing site, trying to show that they were merely seeing lighthouse on their way through the woods. But a local resident, Rob Klein, a trained physicist, has tested this route and found it doesn't fit. In 2 years of research, though, Robert McLean has made a most important discovery, which we can reveal. This is an unlit, narrow country lane winding along the edge of Rendlesham Forest, about a quarter of a mile from the place people have assumed the search party emerged as they followed their UFO. If you come out of the forest here, Robert McLean has found, you can retrace Colonel Holt's movements on the tape exactly and identify the real source of the lights.
Colonel Holt and his party came out of the forest and spilled out onto this road here. The lighthouse is in this direction there.
Over there.
You can't see it from here because oak is in the way. However, they weren't following the light from the Orford Ness Lighthouse. They were, in fact, following the light from a lightship called the Shipwash.
And where was that?
Directly ahead.
And they could see that because it's to the right of the trees?
That's right. They could see the flash in the sky above the rise in the field here in front of us. But as they walked up this slope in this field, that light became brighter. They thought it was heading towards them. And then they saw something which was truly strange. A flashing light directly ahead, and then another light coming from within the forest, apparently. In fact, the Orford Ness Lighthouse was just cutting through a corner of the forest. The lights appeared to be synchronized in some way, and that's where the idea of the thing throwing off sparks came from.
Robert Bain offers a detailed, purely terrestrial explanation for most of Colonel Holt's sightings, but not quite all.
Colonel Holt says that a light appeared in the sky and moved towards them at high speed and shone down a pencil-thin beam of light that didn't spread out. That can't be explained, except perhaps he was seeing someone shine a flashlight up into the sky, and he misinterpreted that as a light coming down.
It's tantalising, this, isn't it? You've got a long way to explaining, in purely terrestrial terms, what Colonel Holt and his colleagues said they saw, but not quite all the way.
Well, there's always one last bit to investigate, isn't there?
Which suggests a long life to come for the story of the alien landing in Rendlesham Forest. Brenda Butler, out sky-watching, believes that this part of Suffolk is especially rich in extraterrestrial visits.
What do you think it is about this place that seems to attract this number of stories of sightings?
I think that there is a portal here. It's letting through everything else from other dimensions. We've seen several craft down here, UFOs. We've seen spinning discs, and we've seen several ETs. And we've seen ETs watching us through the bushes.
Have you had any communication with them?
Yes. In June 2000, they contacted me when I was walking up track 12, and I started talking this weird language, and I've been talking it to them ever since.
Look up Rendlesham on the internet, and you'll be in for a busy evening. To Dr. David Clark of Sheffield University, the vitality of belief in the story of the UFO ranks as a modern instance of myth-building, a groundwork of strange fact supporting an elaborate edifice of wishful thinking.
It's almost like a case of the Blair Witch Project. Once they got into the forest, they started seeing things that otherwise they probably would have ignored. When you look behind all these UFO cases, this is what you find. Lots of straightforward misperceptions come together because people are actually looking for UFOs, they're wanting to see them, and mysterious lights and strange happenings that would otherwise not be relevant suddenly become relevant to the whole mythology.
David Clark and his colleague Andy Roberts are systematically examining major moments in British UFO history to sort fact from fable.
We will take a case apart in the same way that a detective would do, almost like a cold case investigation, and we will go back to the original sources and the original witnesses and see if we can actually find out what happened.
If a physical event like a flying saucer was seen, landed or crashed, then someone would be aware of it and there would be a paper trail created. This could be government documents in the public record office, it could be police files, it could be letters between investigators. And what we do is we go back, we find these reports, put them together with what the witnesses have said, and by doing so we come up with a jigsaw which is hopefully the whole picture of exactly what happened.
It's an approach which Andy Roberts has applied to another famous British sighting, this one involving claims that actual aliens were retrieved from a crashed flying saucer.
How high up is this?
Well, 1,200 feet.
And this was late January?
Yes, pitch black, 9 o'clock at night, and came roughly to the top here. Got out here and just looked and listened and couldn't see anything.
On a bleak winter night almost 30 years ago, Hugh Lloyd was at home on the family farm near Barla in North Wales when police arrived, hammered on the front door and commandeered a Land Rover and Hugh himself as their guide up the rough tracks. He was just 14. The officers said there'd been a plane crash on top of the Berwyn Mountains and they had no time to lose. Once they reached the peak, they saw something much stranger than any of them expected.
The place lit up with a very bright light coming from the valley over there.
And what kind of bright light?
A white light, like it was coming upwards from the ground anyway. So, but it was very bright and, you know, we could see everybody's faces.
As bright as what, would you say?
I tried to describe it before, arc light.
Like a welder would use?
Yeah, but, you know, whiter.
How large an area did the light seem to come from?
Oh, a few hundred feet.
That's huge.
I should say, yeah.
And what did you think it was?
No idea. No mystery. You know, it was that bright and then it was gone. It didn't last that long, half a minute. It's that.
Is there anything over in that direction?
No, nothing, no.
Just hills?
Just hills, yes. Yeah, rough country.
Then, as oddly as it came, the light vanished, leaving the mountaintop in pitch darkness. They thought it came from about 2 miles away and set off across the high, boggy moors. But soon even the Land Rover was stuck and they had to give up in bewilderment. They weren't alone. The whole area had shuddered mysteriously 45 minutes earlier.
All of a sudden, there was an ominous sort of rumbling sound, and then the whole cottage seemed to shake. And my thoughts immediately were, oh, heavens, it's the dam above the town of Bala that's gone.
The local police sergeant, Eldred Roberts, had just come off duty. He rushed back to the police station and quickly established that the dam was intact. But his phone never stopped ringing, and most of the deluge of calls came from the area around Llandrillo. So Sergeant Roberts and his inspector went to investigate.
As we were driving along, we suddenly saw a huge glow in the sky ahead of us, this tremendous green light. But it was difficult to say where it had appeared from, although it appeared to be going from the earth up.
How long did you see it for?
Between 5 to 10 seconds.
And what did you think it could be?
The green light was very intriguing. I can't explain it. I wish somebody could explain it.
The major incident log kept by the then Gwynedd Constabulary records the initial assumption that there'd been a plane crash. The ambulance and fire services were put on standby. But Sergeant Roberts, who went on to become Assistant Chief Constable, never believed that any plane could have shaken his cottage so badly miles away. What's more, there was no report of any aircraft being lost. Add the absence of visible wreckage, and the police were left with nothing but questions.
Much to my surprise, there was nothing at all unusual to be found on that mountain. I must say that I was quite disappointed, really, that there wasn't some sort of physical evidence that could unlock this mystery for us. And to this day, I really don't know what explains that night's events.
But the rumours began to fly, did they?
Yes, initially, people were quite content to accept that it was a natural phenomenon. But as the days went into weeks, people started talking about various other things that could explain it.
This was the moment when the inexplicable took on a life of its own. Llandrillo was to become a centre of international pilgrimage and the fellowship of believers in UFOs. Imaginations went into overdrive in the days after the mysterious lights and rumblings, as villagers saw planes flying search missions over the mountains, and then found themselves questioned by unidentified officials they took to be secret agents from the government. An official-looking report circulated from a group calling itself the Aerial Phenomena Inquiry Network. It gave a dramatic account of aliens crash-landing and being retrieved from the Berwyn Mountains.
My daughter and her husband ran the pub, and all these people from round about that area used to come into the pub to tell me about what had happened there because they heard that I did UFO investigating.
Margaret Fry's reports of the incident have brought her a worldwide reputation as a UFO investigator and co-founder of the Welsh Federation of Ufologists. From conversations over the past decade, 20 years after the event, she's assembled what she says is a detailed narrative of what villagers in Llandrillo witnessed that night as they came out of their houses.
They could see red glow in the sky over the area of Berwyn Mountain, so they got in their cars and they went to see what was happening up this council dirt track road which leads to the base of the Berwyn Mountain. There were policemen and military men there, and they said that they were to turn back. And what they could see was this huge pinky-orange egg-shaped object sitting just above the tree line and pulsating.
And what did they think they were looking at?
They thought they were looking at a UFO. They definitely all said that.
Villagers have told us they have no memory of anyone in Llandrillo saying at the time that they'd been turned back on the mountain road and sent away by the army. But Margaret Fry insists her account is accurate, that people are now too frightened of official reprisals to acknowledge the truth openly. It's that perennial problem with reports of extraterrestrial visitors. They seem to leave no evidence that any non-believer can test.
How many people did you speak to who said they'd seen this?
I never counted them to start off with because I was being told this in pubs or maybe in a shop.
Do you have the names of these people?
I never took their names at the time, no. So many people came and told me this. They're not going to invent things like that. Not the same thing anyway.
And have you managed to speak to anyone who saw an alien of any kind there?
Yes, in recent years, yes. They say that they were living in farmhouses in the area at the time, and they actually saw aliens being taken away by military vehicles.
And there are people you've met who say they saw this?
Yeah.
Do you believe them?
Yes.
How could I meet one of these people?
I don't think you would be able to. I haven't been able to. I've only met one.
Could I meet him?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because, A, I don't think he'd want to meet anybody. And B, he's not a particularly well person either.
So the closest I'm going to get to this is what you're telling me, he
That's
said.
That's right, yeah. You either take what my word for it or you don't.
Margaret Fry says she has another witness who had a distant view of living aliens being taken away from the Welsh mountains, describing them as much like us, but with larger heads. When I asked how tall they were, she replied, about 5'6½". These claims have given Llandrillo the status of Britain's equivalent of the Roswell incident, the legendary story of an alien corpse from a crashed flying saucer being given a secret autopsy on an airbase in New Mexico in 1947. The claim of a parallel in North Wales is supported in a book by a former Yorkshire police sergeant, Tony Dodd. He wrote in 1999 that he had a statement from a former British military officer who had helped in the recovery of alien corpses from the Ben Mountains.
At approximately 11:30, we were ordered to go to Llandaff Fell and were under strict orders not to stop for any civilians. When we reached our objective, we were ordered to load some cargo into our vehicles. We were ordered to proceed to Porton Down. We eventually reached Porton Down and moved the boxes inside the facility. Once inside, the boxes were opened in our presence and we were shocked to see two creatures. It was obvious the creatures were not of this world.
It's a striking piece of evidence, but again, we've no way of putting it to the test. We've established that even Tony Dodd only had it second hand from a friend and found himself frustrated in his efforts to meet the mysterious military officer.
Well, through my contact, I asked my contact to see them and ask if he would give me an interview regarding the incident. And sometime later, my contact came back to me and said, yes, he would. And then shortly before the date arrived when I was to see him, my contact phoned me and said, the interview is off. The military have approached our contact, apart from others, and have been threatening to take very severe action against anybody who talks about it. Then there was a gap in time, and my contact went back. I said, well, can you try again and see if we can make him talk to us? And he went back, and when he came to me next time, he said, I'm sorry, he said, the place where he was living is now boarded up and he's not living there. So he said, I don't know where he is.
Do you believe that this former military person really existed?
Oh, indeed, yes, I do.
You don't think it could have been a hoax?
No, I don't, no.
The incident on the Berwyn Mountains is a popular puzzle. Clearly something major really happened to shake Llandrillo village and far beyond, and witnesses did see strange lights. But how much of the rest is just creative addition to the story? When the Sheffield team reinvestigated the incident, they traced an astronomer who'd driven to Llandrillo early the day after in 1974 to find out what had happened. Dr. Ron Madison, then at the University of Kiel, soon solved the mystery.
It's a complicated series of events. There was, in fact, a movement on the Bala Fault. Now, that was quite a large local earthquake. Now, we had a lot of reports that at precisely the same time as the earthquake, there was sighting of a very, very bright fireball, and there would be flashing in the sky, very bright green flashes that moved from the east over towards Pwllheli and went into the Irish Sea, we believe. There were two or three other meteors in the sky at that time. One was about an hour earlier, and there were two that were about half an hour and three quarters of an hour later. So the evidence points to a tremendous celestial-terrestrial coincidence.
But the coincidence of an earthquake and a cluster of meteors doesn't quite explain everything. There's still the mysterious sighting of a glowing orange object on the mountainside, which had been seen by a named and credible witness.
You watched it for how long, about?
Well, we watched it for 5 minutes or more on the way up. We turned round and could...
Andy Roberts interviewed Pat Evans, a local nurse. She said that when police feared there'd been a plane crash, she volunteered to drive up the side of the mountain with her two daughters
to offer emergency assistance.
We could see to our left then this huge orange ball, and there was no windows in it, no doors in it, and it seemed to be pulsating or glowing.
Pat Evans also remembers seeing smaller lights moving towards the orange glowing mass. She decided that whatever it was, she'd reach it by road, and so turned back and went home. Had she seen something from another world? Andy Roberts found the answer 300 miles away.
I went up to the British Geological Survey in Edinburgh because I wanted to get a printout of the actual earth tremor. I was given a huge pile of box files which I sat down to look through. And as I opened these box files, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, because I was seeing sheaf after sheaf of documents which had detailed interview with witnesses to the events of that night. There were maps with crosses on showing where each individual was. And suddenly the whole picture just jumped out in a three-dimensional way.
This evidence had been gathered by scientists from the British Geological Survey, who spent days interviewing people in Llandrillo immediately following the incident. They were the spooky agents asking questions around the village. Their contemporaneous accounts from eyewitnesses had lain undisturbed for almost 30 years. They identified and interviewed poachers who'd been at work on the Berwyn Mountains that night, using powerful lights to catch their prey. From map preferences recorded in the Geological Survey, Andy Roberts concluded that he could disentangle the entire mystery.
Pat Evans is in many ways the key witness to the whole Berwyn Mountain events. She could see a strange ball of reddish-orange light on the mountainside with tiny little fairy lights, as she describes it, around them. This has entered into the UFO mythology as some form of crash retrieval team going up to the crashed UFO to investigate it. In reality, the light that Pat Evans saw must have been a lamp held by the poachers. The fact that it was appeared very large and was reddy-orange and pulsated was partly because they were using very large, powerful lamps, partly because the light was refracting through the light drizzle that night, and partly because Pat Evans and her daughters were predisposed to believe that something had crashed. Bizarre as it may sound, you've got a complex series of random events that ufologists have looked at in retrospect, and in fact forged a UFO case where none existed.
With this sceptical conclusion, Andy Roberts explains the UFO in the Berwyn Mountains as an awe-inspiring conjunction of natural phenomena, and sadly not the long-awaited arrival of an alien civilization. But he accepts that in the sacred sites of ufology, such as Llandrillo and Rendlesham Forest, true believers will continue to seek confirmation of their faith and find it.
We live in an age where people are concerned with living a rational, logical life based on the principles of science, yet we still have an undercurrent of people believing in essentially the same sorts of things that people believed in the Middle Ages. 400 years ago, people believed in fairies. Now we have people believing in aliens. It's not a very logical way of looking at the world.
The reporter in the new X-Files was Jerry Northam, and the programme was produced in Manchester by David Lewis.